everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you. Hope you had a delightful Easter weekend. It was nice to have Easter Monday off here. Bustos Media giving us an extra day off, so basically a three-day weekend. So we're back live in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. My buddy John, engineering and producing on the other side of the glass, and we welcome you to Buckmaster on Tuesday, April the 19th, 2022, in our 12th year now with the radio project. The radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website at buckmastershow.com. We piggyback the live feed then from kvoi.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We will be utilizing the live line for our first segment today with Mitch Tobin, who is the director of the Water Desk, a journalism initiative at the University of Colorado Boulder that focuses on Western water issues in the Colorado River Basin. Mitch is also our contributor on the environment. We're delighted to have such an award-winning journalist like Mitch with us. He's a former environmental reporter from the Napa Valley Register, the Tucson Citizen, and the Arizona Daily Star. He's the author of Endangered, which shows why so many species are at risk of extinction. That book won a gold medal in the Independent Book Publisher Awards. Mitch joins us now from his home base in Colorado. Mitch, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Thank you. Always a pleasure. I cannot believe I was looking at the daily water, the precipitation here in Tucson. It's officially about a half an inch of rain, and we're almost, Mitch, we're almost through with April, and, you know, I tell you, that does not bode well. I mean, unless we get another great monsoon, another summer rain, we've got issues here. Are you getting any much precipitation in Colorado?
Well, you know, it hasn't really been a great year as far as the snowpack here in Colorado, which is really critical for the Colorado River. And, you know, it started out terribly, and then we got a good amount of snow, as did California and Sierra Nevada right before the new year. But then, you know, really went into a stretch of about 6 weeks where it was super dry and, you know, really in the heart of the winter when we would be hoping and expecting to get snow. So generally speaking, snowpack is below average in the West. So that's not good news in terms of the runoff to the Colorado River. I'm looking at the U.S. Drought Monitor map right now, and pretty much all of the West, aside from a few small places in the Pacific Northwest, are in various states of drought. So, yeah, we could really use a good monsoon, and we could use a number of years in a row of above average snowpack to reverse this trend.
Mitch, we're going to ask you to transition from a speakerphone. We believe you're on a speakerphone to more of a direct. Can you do that to a more of a direct? That is
sure. No problem. Is that better?
That's better. John, is that better for? I'm asking John. Yeah, a little bit. Mitch, give us a little more.
Yep.
How does that sound?
Yeah. That. Does that sound okay?
Much, much better.
Okay,
much better,
great.
Mitch. Okay. The big news out of the Colorado River water, Mitch Tobin, is this. It's kind of, it's being called unprecedented that the U.S. Secretary of the Interior is considering an action that would create a possible immediate cutback in the Colorado River. What can you tell us about this?
Well, this has been a longstanding issue where the reservoir levels, Lake Mead and Lake Powell, have been going down. And so Lake Powell right now is at about 24% full. And so there is serious concern that if the reservoir continues to drop, that Glen Canyon Dam will not be able to generate hydropower. And there's also concern about having to route the water through a different way, not through the turbines, if the lake level is so low, of that causing damage to the dam. And so, you know, as I said, this has been a sort of below average snowpack year. And because of climate change and the warming atmosphere and the thirstier soils and the thirstier atmosphere, You know, that's not translating into as much runoff to the reservoirs as, you know, we were accustomed to. And so we're experiencing right now what's called a mega drought. And scientists believe that this is the worst drought in the last 1,200 years or so. And they know that by studying tree rings, which can give them information about what the climate was like and what the flow in the Colorado River was like many, many centuries ago, even, 1,200 years ago. So the overall trend is for the basin to continue to get drier because of climate change. And so, this problem is not going to go away anytime soon.
If we had a 1,200-year, it's been a, we're in this, as you say, it's 1,200-year drought, or the last time we had anything like that. Do we know through the tree rings? I mean, we're in the 20th year already of this drought. Do we have any idea how long that particular drought in 1,200 years ago lasted?
Well, you know, we don't know when the drought will end. That's the difficult thing about droughts is they sort of creep up and we don't really know when they're going to stop. It's not like a hurricane or a tornado. But, you know, we do know from tree rings that even taking away climate change and what we've done to the climate and, you know, the recent centuries, that the basin is subject to these periodic, very dry spells. And, you know, the thinking among many people is that, many, many hundreds of years ago, 800-900 years ago, when the region dried out, similar to today, that led to the depopulation of the Four Corners area. And people abandoning places like Mesa Verde and Chaco Canyon. And so, the scientists who study this basically are saying that this drought is kind of tantamount to that drought. Looking back more than 1,000 years, this is a really, truly historic drought, and we don't know when it's going to end. And certainly climate change is not helping things. It's making things even worse.
So with that, getting back to the Lake Powell situation, we have already gone here in Arizona, as you know, Mitch. We have cut back to the farm community. Our farmers have had to cut back, I think it's about a third of their Colorado River usage. Now, could that change with this situation with Lake Powell?
Well, I mean, the concern is that as the situation gets more and more dire on these reservoirs, the cutbacks are going to increase. And as you mentioned, you know, thus far in a place like Arizona, it's primarily been felt in the agricultural sector. And, you know, still to this day, most of the water in the Colorado River Basin is used on farms. And so that's where most of the water is. That's where a lot of the cuts have been happening thus far. But eventually, if the system continues to go down in terms of the runoff to the reservoirs and these lowering levels of Lake Powell and Lake Mead, it's going to start hitting cities, and it's going to not only be concentrated in the agricultural sector. And so the hope is to try to reduce water use and to try to adapt to this new climate that we're living in. But at a certain point, there's going to be sacrifice and pain, and there already has been in some places.
Well, you got to wonder about sustainability with housing and the continual migration out of places in the East and in California over to Arizona. And Mitch Tobin, we're wondering about, how sustainable is this area?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question, and people should be asking that. And I mean, although a lot of this is sort of doom and gloom and the trends are negative in terms of the Colorado River's flow and these reservoirs, there are also positive stories in the sense that places like Tucson, Phoenix, Denver, Southern California, Las Vegas have reduced their per capita water use quite significantly. And so in a lot of cases, some of these places are using less water today than they were a couple decades ago, even though this is the fastest growing portion of the United States. And so at least in a lot of urban areas, we've sort of decoupled population growth, or at least we're starting to, from water use, which is good news that we can live more efficiently without taking so much water. Having said that, even if you reduce the per capita water use, if you continue to increase the population, eventually your overall water use will increase. So again, as I mentioned, farms are still using most of the water. And cities are clearly, you know, growing and are an important demand on the river. But I think what we're going to continue to see is a transfer of water from agricultural areas to cities. And that's not without costs and big problems, certainly for rural communities, certainly for the ecological systems that have become dependent on there being irrigation in certain places. But I think that's the overall trend is for water to be moving from agricultural areas to cities. And of course, that costs money. And so I think we're also going to be seeing the cost of water increase. That raises, of course, issues of affordability because everybody needs water in order to survive. And so raising the price of that is concerning to a lot of people.
All right, Mitch Tobin, we're going to let you go. And hopefully we'll keep our fingers crossed. Some of the forecast models do show a robust summer rainy season for kind of our southeast corner of Arizona. We'll see. Some of those forecasts, Mitch, as you know, are like throwing darts at a dartboard, right?
Yep. Well, I will have my fingers crossed, and here's hoping it really pans out and we get a wet monsoon and continued wet weather beyond that.
Hey, Mitch Tobin, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Bill. Take care.
Mitch Tobin, director of the Water Desk. That is a journalism initiative that's up at the University of Colorado at Boulder. They focus on Western water issues and Colorado River Basin issues. And Mitch also is our environmental reporter. Our financial consultant, Shelley Fishman, is up next. Shelley will be checking in from Reims, France, right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock-full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. This portion of the Buckmaster Show, presented by our favorite bakery, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's is open right now for a wonderful lunch. Open for breakfast Tuesday through Sunday at 6:30. Stop by, check it out, see what all the excitement is about. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. And when you're there, please ask for one of my favorite bear claws.
Shelly Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelly through buckmastershow.com or at shellyfishman.com.
And here he is, telephonically, from one of the most beautiful places in France, Reims, France, Mr. Shelly Fishman, in the second week of his French vacation. Hey, Shelly.
Mr. Buckmaster, how are you today?
Doing very well. You're visiting what is considered to be one of the most beautiful cathedrals in the world.
It is spectacular. We spent a bunch of time there earlier today. It's like being in this bizarrely large space that was built 800 years ago. I mean, you can't imagine how high it is, how tall it is, and that space is all open. You know, Gothic, the French Gothic architecture allows for a lot of light to come into the space, and it's not interrupted by a bunch of solid walls. So it has this feeling of floating over you. I can't describe it. It's got to be a quarter of a mile long, I can't even estimate how high it is at the center down the center aisle. It's spectacular, and the city itself, Reims, is right in the middle of champagne, grape, and winery production area of France, and most of the large champagne manufacturers have their manufacturing plants right here in and around the town. So it's what it's known for, and the cathedral itself and the building right next to it is where all of the kings of France for the last one, I guess, was Louis the 16th, and before then, several kings were coronated, had their coronations here rather than in Paris. So it's a city with a very proud tradition and some great food.
Shelley, it is a miracle that the cathedral is even still standing, up to 300 shells between April 1917 and July of 1918 in World War I, really damaged it. Much of the building had a lot of damage, but thank goodness that the bones were still, if you will, the bones of the cathedral were still intact.
Well, it's remarkable, because to look at the pictures of the damage that was done and then the 30 years of repair that it took to get it back to its original state, or, you know, something resembling its original state, you understand what the French are going through now in Paris restoring Notre Dame. It turns out they've got some experience with this kind of thing.
Yeah. Shelley, wanted to ask you about these, what they are called, Russian sovereign dollar delineated debt. There is about, I understand, $83 billion of this debt. And I'm just curious, how about the holders of those Russian bonds?
Okay, so these are bonds. They're Russian bonds that we have invested with, that the Russians have invested in and paid for in dollars, and the interest payments on those bonds have to be paid in dollars. That's the rule. And there's a very large interest payment due. I believe it's about $800 million due in May. And it doesn't appear as if the Russian Federation has the money to make those payments. So the question then becomes, what happens? And that turns out not to be an easy question to answer, because there are any number of things that could happen. You know, first of all, the Russians can and already have offered to pay the interest in rubles, and that's not acceptable. What can happen, of course, is the bonds can be called, which means that all $83 billion would be due, and the Russians, of course, cannot even begin to think about making those payments. So if they're in default, then there are lawsuits all over the place, and the bondholders, many of whom are in the U.S., would be essentially put on hold during that period of time. And then there's this little war going on besides, and it's likely that if Ukraine survives this war, they are going to want to receive back from the Russians some amount of payments that will probably amount to at least that amount of money.
Yeah.
And they're going to go to court to get that back.
Yep.
So this is something that the bond market and the world financial community has been queuing up to try to deal with. It's not clear how it will come out in the end. What is clear is that it's not a little problem.
It sounds like it is a huge problem. I'll tell you, speaking of huge, it's a big, big day on Wall Street. Of course, your European markets closed several hours ago, but right now the Dow is up over 500 points, Shelley.
Well, you know, I just wanted to make sure, and I, you know, called everybody I know at the Dow and said, you know, it's a Tuesday, but, you know, give Bill and me a break.
Give me a break. It's Tuesday, and we are getting a break. And one question we keep hearing, are we headed for a recession? And I guess sooner or later we are, but when?
Well, when is the question? I mean, there will definitely be a recession at some point in the future. We had Larry Summers last week with an op-ed, I believe it was in the Washington Post. Steve Rattner, who appears from time to time on the Morning Joe program, was also quoted. He wrote an article. And what they're saying is, we told you there was going to be inflation, and guess what? There is. Now, the fact that the reasons they said there was going to be inflation, probably not the reasons that we're having the inflation, but nevertheless, you know, they've proven to be right in terms of the fact that the inflation is here. It's longer lasting than anybody wanted it to be. But now those guys are saying that there's a higher likelihood than not that by the end of next 2024, which of course is a presidential election year for us, that there's about a 35% or 40% chance that the U.S. economy will slip into recession. Now, a recession, by definition, just to remind the viewers, is 2 months in a row of negative GDP growth. And that percentage, even if you listen to the doomsayers like Summers and Rattner, is still below 50%. So if everything kind of stays status quo, the war in Ukraine, you know, winds down and supply chains continue to open up and growth in China is at around 6%, and growth in the U.S., you know, might fall to maybe 3 or 3.5%. My bet is that we're not going to see a recession until about 2026. However, my crystal ball isn't any better necessarily, and probably somewhat, you know, not as well researched as Larry Summers and Steve Rattner. So if you're an investor, you need to make a decision about whether or not you can live through a recession and just stroke it off and ignore it, and you know, go past it, because we always recover from those things. If you don't think you could do that, you need to talk to your financial advisor and see what becoming more defensive in your investment posture would really mean to your portfolio. I'm not doing a thing. I'm just sitting here waiting.
All right. And now the important question for someone who is visiting Reims, France. You're right there in the middle of the Champagne, really the Champagne center of the world. And I know all of the big vintners have their tasting rooms. Have you had a chance to, you and Bob, to sample?
Well, that is on the agenda for Thursday morning.
Thursday morning.
And then we'll get down there and sample some, and I promise one way or another, we will get you guys a couple of bottles of champagne.
You're kidding. That would be wonderful. If you see any Blanc de Blanc, that's what we love, the Blanc, the whitest of the white, so keep an eye out for it. All right.
Okay, we sure will. Looking forward to going through these caverns that were dug into the chalk, the chalk base of this part of the world. Apparently, there's hundreds of miles of them.
Wow, that's going to be fun. I'm sure you've got the calendar circled there for your tasting on Thursday. All right, we'll check in from France with you a week from today. Stay safe and enjoy the ride home eventually now without a mask. That might make it a little easier for you, Shell.
It'll certainly be less unpleasant.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Stay safe.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Discover your world inside Biosphere 2. Explore living, breathing scientific research. Using the new Biosphere 2 Experience app, you can now explore one of the wonders of the world's amazing 30-year history and future through never-before-seen videos and photos. Visit today at info@biosphere2.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We love green things, especially this time of year. As we transition now into kind of mid-spring and start thinking about the really warm weather that's coming our way, this is a great time to go by Green Things 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. One of the things that we love about Green Things on their 13-acre site is when you talk to their associates and you ask them, you know, I'd like something that will survive well into the summer, they can point you in the right direction, because that is such a crucial question about when you do gardening here in the Southwest. What is going to survive our very hot weather that is coming? Green Things, 3384 East River Road, they're in their 51st year of business. They're open daily. Their website is greenthingsaz.com. Their sister business, which is on site, has all that beautiful merchandise, much of it handcrafted from Mexico, Latin America, and there's some European goods as well. It's called Zocalo Village. Their website is zocalovillage.com. Joining us in studio, Dr. Albrecht Clausen, University Distinguished Professor and Director of Outreach in the Department of German Studies at the University of Arizona. He has a broad range of research interests covering history of medieval and early modern German and European literature and culture from about 800 to 1800. He's also involved with contemporary literature. He writes poetry and prose. He's published hundreds of scholarly articles and book citations, translations, and textbooks, including a handbook of medieval studies. I sometimes wonder when the professor ever finds time to put his head on the pillow and actually sleep. I mean, this man is constantly working. He has won many honors, including the Grand Knight Commander of the Most Noble Order of the Three Lions, in recognition of outstanding services to German studies. He's also the newest member of the 5-member board of the Arizona Humanities Board of Director. He's had a couple of new books we've talked about. We talked about his book, Incarnation and Slavery in the Middle Ages and the Early Modern Age, a cultural historic investigation of the dark side of the pre-modern world. And we've also talked about, since we visited with him a couple of months ago, a book that had just come out titled Wisdom from the Middle Ages. But I do want to mention, Professor, and first of all, it's always a pleasure to welcome you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Bill. I'm very happy to be here.
The new book about haiku, this is a particular form of poetry. It's titled Deep Poetic Gazes into the World, Haiku. You had a haiku today, and I always look forward to seeing them on Facebook, showing some beautiful green leafy vegetation. And it says, close green encounter, a brief moment in my life, indomitable. Is that correct?
Yes,
so
that's correct.
I don't understand haiku. I appreciate it. Could you explain it? What do you, when you write haiku, does it always have to be three lines, or
yes,
what are the protocols, parameters for it?
Right. Formally, it is a Japanese poem, a form of poetry. Three lines. The first has 5 syllables. The second line has 7 syllables. And the third one, 5 syllables again. Always needs to be a reference to a season. So somehow nature. But otherwise, it allows you, invites you to reflect on philosophical, ethical, moral, or religious issues. I think always in connection with nature.
Hmm. But you also write other poetry. You just recently wrote a poem and sent it to a friend over in Russia.
Yes, it was a poem in which I have reflected on the situation of the war in Ukraine. And it is a very painful situation, but poetry is, as elusive as it might be, really a powerful way of addressing the horrors right now. Interestingly enough, my Russian colleague liked it very much. I basically attack Putin, and she shared it then with friends in Ukraine. Mm. So, in other words, via poetry, we have suddenly, beyond science or scholarship, a human connection. Which, because the Russians are not necessarily behind Putin, they are just as repressed as maybe the Germans were repressed under Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to maintain that scholarly connection because that's the only thing that helps us to survive and look into the future.
Yeah, well, that colleague could have put in, the colleague could have been in danger, though, right? I mean,
that's possible.
If
that's
sending
right.
that poem on to somebody in the Ukraine, and we were talking just briefly before I went on the air. If you are a Russian citizen or are a Russian citizen who does not believe in the war, and I understand there are probably millions of Russians who are not backing this
yes.
insane war, you would still not want to be too open. If you've seen these pictures of these giant apartment complexes in Moscow, would you want to say to a neighbor, you know, this Putin thing is crazy? I don't think it would be a very wise move.
Yeah, but at the same time, our Western media do not report enough about the hundreds and hundreds of massive demonstrations in Russian cities.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe 15 to 20,000 Russians already in prison just because they demonstrated. There was a woman in Russian TV about 4 weeks ago who protested against the war. Of course, she was immediately taken away, whisked away, and is probably in a prison. You know, also of this famous critic, forget his name right now, Navalny or something like that, who is really the great outspoken opponent to Putin. And so there are lots of people who are really fighting bravely.
You are a native of Germany. You were born in Germany. And through your life, did you ever think we would envision or see kind of the scenario that we're seeing of burned out tanks in European cities that have been totally leveled? Something right out of scenes out of World War II, the siege of the cities in Moscow. It looks kind of like the final days of Berlin in
yes.
April 1945.
Indeed, to some extent, I would not have expected that. At the same time, I grew up during the Cold War, and we were always antsy and fearful that the Russians could march in. It was a famous so-called Fulda Gap, where the Third World War was supposed to start. It's about 30 miles away from my hometown. And I remember 1968, when the Russians marched into Prague, the very first thing my parents did, took us four kids to town, bought new shoes, boots, I mean, it was spring,
yeah, yeah.
boots for the winter and coats,
yeah, yeah.
ready to flee. So,
really?
We were afraid of that. So, but ever since there has been this approach, particularly by maybe left-leaning social democratic politicians, trying to build bridges with Russia by means of trade. And money, they said money talks louder than weapons. Well, we all have been deceived. I mean, lots and lots of American companies are doing big business in Russia. And they all have believed they could somehow negotiate and thereby bring down this dangerous opponent, and we all have been wrong.
Germany seems to have one foot in the water and one foot not in the water when it comes to sanctions for Russia.
Yeah, well, but just today I read that, again, two or three major companies have decided and have declared they will shut down completely. Some of these companies make up to 10% of their business in Russia. So some have said, no, we cannot because we're selling medicine and other similar healthcare products. So we don't want to hurt the private population there. But there is a massive exodus, not only the American, but also very much the German industry, because the public is so opposed to that. The big problem, of course, is energy, and the European reliance too much on Russian energy. So the entire world is reshifting right now its focus, and that's fascinating to see. I mean, the first victim was Nord Stream 2, the big, big pipeline which the Russians built with German approval and support, which was supposed to start actually this year, and this has been shut down completely. So,
what do you expect to find? You were sidelined from your annual trips. You would go to Germany and Europe pretty much every year for how many years before the pandemic? You were taking students there, and you were doing trips for many, several decades, right?
That's exactly right.
And what do you expect to find when you return in May? Do you find a more unified Europe?
A more unified Europe where actually the Eastern countries will be much more in support of the Western efforts. However, we also have to be very careful in trusting this peaceful relationship. Poland, for example, we have a lot of very good friends, but Poland has very dangerous anti-democratic government. And they have unified the court system with the government. Everything is under the Polish control, the governmental control. So let's say at one point the war will be over, I hope. Of course, that doesn't mean that Poland, therefore, will suddenly emerge as a truly partner, as a true democratic country. That is not to be trusted. Right now, we don't pay attention to these internal conflicts and tensions, but they will resurface.
When we continue, language is so important, and Putin uses certain terms that really harken back to the days of Adolf Hitler. When we continue with Dr. Albrecht Clausen, University of Arizona Distinguished Professor, Director of Outreach in the Department of German Studies, we will talk about that and other things. Always a fascinating visit when Dr. Clausen visits the Buckmaster Show. Be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen.
Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is The Buckmaster Show. This portion of the program presented by one of our great sponsors over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's a wonderful getaway. It's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. If you're looking to do some outdoor activities, this is the place to go. The Gila National Wilderness, America's first national wilderness, dating all the way back to President Teddy Roosevelt. Check it out. Three-hour drive from Tucson, go to southwestnewmexico.org to look at things to do. And as I say, there are a lot of things to do and great places to stay, and you'll have a great time. We continue now with our periodic visits. Usually bring in Dr. Albrecht Clausen every couple of months here on the Buckmaster Show for always a wide-ranging conversation, because he is, I think he's our show's Renaissance man. He can, as I said during the introduction, I wonder when this guy sleeps. I mean, he is so prolific in his writing, and he's the director of outreach in the Department of German Studies at the UA, where he's also a university distinguished professor. But right now, I want to talk about language, and it's serendipitous that I brought this up to you, Dr. Clausen, because you are preparing. You have a talk coming up in Florence, Arizona, at the library on April 28th, and the topic will be language.
That's right. Language is actually the most important thing, because it determines all our existence.
It defines our reality. It defines who is a real person, who isn't, who controls language, controls life and death. And those were really not my words, but the words of a pretty famous German literature professor.
Yeah, Victor Klemperer survived the war. He was Jewish, but his wife was Aryan German, as they called it at that time. And somehow, almost mysteriously, he survived. And during his years in Dresden, he kept a very detailed diary, one of the most famous diaries, in which he sort of recorded the daily lives as a Jew in Nazi Germany, who was not deported. And he also reflected very intensively on the abuse of language by the Nazis.
They became with the Nazi propaganda machine, and as the professor points out, that at the center of the Nazi propaganda power machine, the professor concluded, was how the Nazis developed really a certain language, which defined the new kind of in-groups and those groups that were on the out. Please elaborate for us.
The Nazis, particularly Hitler, relied heavily on the newest scientific language. So they talked very much about biology and the body, the people, the nation as a body, and minority groups whom they hated as sort of bacteria and viruses that
vermin,
had to be.
Like vermin.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or as a virus or bacteria that attacked.
That must be extinguished.
Exactly. And that gave the people a sense of, yeah, that's right, because the scholars say that. I mean, you know this, maybe this Stanford experiment, where a man in a white uniform stands there and orders people to press a button which hurts a person in another room as a part of an experiment. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, the electric jolt is so strong, or would be so strong, mm-hmm. that you would kill the other person. Mm-hmm. And you hear the screams through the microphone.
Yeah.
And they all do it. They all do it because they follow the scientists. They follow the authorities. So I don't think the Germans were an exceptional group. I think this is a danger we all face.
A danger to all of humanity.
All
is
of
what
humanity.
You're saying. A danger, a red flag to all of us.
Think about the political situation in the last 5 years, where suddenly the term alternative facts.
Yeah, yeah.
It's absurd. Either we have facts or we have no facts.
Yes.
But many people who worked for the previous president...
Alternative reality.
Yeah. And that was a new reality. And for them, it was all right.
It's a very good point. So now, how does this fit into Putin, who likes to use kind of calling Ukrainian leaders Nazis?
Yeah, this is a very interesting
even
point.
Even though the head of the Ukraine is a Jew.
Absolutely, yeah. But we do the same thing, I think, in our country. We abuse that term Nazi too easily to put down opponents who might be radical right-wing people, whatever. But Nazis were really a very distinct group. It's like you would say what happens in American prisons, that's a Holocaust. No, we need to distinguish the terms a little bit. But Putin operates very successfully, at least for his people, not for us, by calling the Ukrainian government Nazis. That is absurd, but it works because it's such a glib term.
That plays to his audience. And it does hearken back to Russia in World War II and their battle with the Nazis and the Nazi invasion of Russia.
Well, because it's playing on nationality. Mm-hmm. The Russians, the Russian glory. The Germans, the German glory. Mm-hmm. But we have to be careful. We also, in America, live by the American glory, destiny manifest. We have to be careful. Mm-hmm. There are lots of people who do not necessarily follow into our accepted framework. So we have to differentiate. But Putin, I was about to say Stalin, but it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Appealing to the Russian nationalism, which is a very dangerous strategy because it's effective and it stereotypes everyone.
In so many ways, Putin has taken the Stalin playbook, hasn't he?
Absolutely. And it's kind of typical because Stalin's fame has risen against for the last 15 years or so. Russia or Soviet Union had slowly turned its back to Stalin.
Yeah.
But since sort of 2000, 2005 or so, there has been a resurgence of Stalinism, this glorious, mighty ruler. I would like to remind the audience as well that what Putin does against Ukraine is not the first thing. You have heard maybe of the Holodorom. Holodorom meaning in 1932 and 1933, the Soviets forcefully deprived the Ukrainians of food. So,
I did not know. I kind of had heard about this. Tell me again.
So
this is not really a new thing, what they're doing in Ukraine.
Ukraine is a breadbasket for the entire world.
Yeah, okay.
And there was, however, a bad harvest all over Russia, also in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. But Stalin saw that as an opportunity basically to commit genocide against the Ukrainians. Mm. Holodomor, that's the correct pronunciation. Holodomor meant that they forcefully removed massive amount of food from the Ukraine. And
starve the people to death.
And there were about 7 to 12 million dead Ukrainians.
Oh, my goodness.
We don't even remember this.
This is something we don't even hear about.
There's some very important movies about that recently. The Holodomor was almost worse than the Holocaust. Because Stalin had no concern whatsoever. So the same attitude, decimate, eliminate Ukrainians, kill them all, basically kill them all. Mm. That is the attitude, and that's what we have to be so careful. The West would not be spared. If Putin could march west, he would.
Do you have a feeling, and I'm just about out of time, but is your gut feeling that if he takes the East or recaptures the East of the Ukraine, that that would be enough to kind of end this, or... Do you think he'll go back to Kyiv?
He is in need of a major military victory for, I think, May 7th or May 9th.
Oh, for the anniversary?
Exactly, right. And he wants to triumph. So he wants to kind of say, I took back the Russian section.
Russian-speaking section.
Exactly.
And
Donbass,
that would be, maybe that would be considered a victory for him. Maybe it would end it.
Yeah,
who
but
knows?
I don't think it will end because the Ukrainians
They're
will not
up
give
a good
up.
Fight. Yeah.
They have killed already so many Russian generals. They just destroyed the major navy ship of the Russians. More and more weapons are flowing into Ukraine. The war will go on for a long time, I'm afraid.
Dr. Albrecht Clausen, always a pleasure to have you on the program. And check out his new book. You can look at it at Amazon, Deep Poetic Gazes into the World, talking about his haiku poetry. So that's his newest addition to his extensive library. Always a pleasure. Safe travels to Europe next month. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Bill.
That's going to do it for Buckmaster. On behalf of Dr. Clausen and John on the other side of the glass, have a great afternoon.